I'm sure they're fine people. I'm actually going to record this because I want... It's an odd time to bring that up, I know. But we're actually going to be talking about a research project, and I wanted Valita to be able to hear what we're doing. So Valita is my partner in crime. She's my wife, and she's also participating in the research remotely, shall we say. So, and Eric actually made a documentary already that's on my website. So if you look at the bottom of my email message, you'll see my website address. And if you click on that, click on Research Projects, and you scroll down, you'll see a link to the documentary about the Uganda research. And Eric put that together. So it's one... it's won campus award. It's won research team awards.
Yes.
You were voted best documentarian among the group.
I didn't know there was a vote.
You have an acceptance speech prepared? You'd like to thank the Academy? Right. Actually, you got a lot of positive feedback on this most recent.
Yeah.
See, your mistake the last time was you brought in a very rough draft, which I was fine with, but...
Yeah, all I had to prove to you was getting something.
That's right.
Marina. My name is Marina, and I'm a first-year student.
Anything else you want to say? What's your interest in the research?
It's very interesting. I enjoy it.
we'll leave it alone.
It's been a long day.
Tita.
I'm Tina. I'm a graduate student. Technically, it's my last year here. I'm a visual assistant / audio coordinator.
And she's graduating a whole year early?
A semester early.
And what are your future plans?
I want to get a master's in mental health counseling first, and then maybe a doctoral
degree. Okay. So you didn't like the idea about the social work? Okay. All right, so that's Tina. Tina is like the hub of this. She's the glue that binds together the research team. She's the one who hands out videos to be transcribed. She takes them back in. She's kind of like organizing everything. So without Tina, this whole thing falls apart. So thank you, Tina. Deb.
I'm Deb. I'm a second year student. I work at the clinic.
It's right next to Lodge A, which is that building that runs perpendicular to ours. And your interest in the project?
That's where we're working with, you know, mothers and children.
You want to mention just a sentence about the presentation you made at APA last year?
That
symbolic play school
readiness and maternal health, and
we conducted
a poster last year.
So. Got accepted to APA, and she was the first author on it.
Congratulations.
She's very modest. Jane.
Hi, I'm Jane. I'm a second year. I work with Jeff on the participant observer, so you'll see me coming in and out of
seeing
the time I can come.
That's optimistic.
And I plan to work maybe with adolescents, not young children, that notwithstanding, I really enjoy learning about the project and transcribing the tapes and seeing how other people's lives go. And work with Deborah on the poster. That was very good.
Alright, Erin.
I'm Erin, I'm a first year, and my background is in neuroscience as well, so that biological sciences, so that was very interesting to hear, and I'll see you on the team.
Alright.
I'm Michelle, I'm also a first year in the program, and I'm interested in the child track here, and I'm not interested in attachment specifically, so I think this is a good fit.
Brianna?
I'm a third year student here. I'm really a third year And my interests include kind of early caregiver child interactions and how that shapes development and sex evolves over time.
Very nice. And you guys want to add anything to the biographies that I provided? Okay. All right, well, let's get to the vote, shall we? So, how many, and let me just tell you the two votes here. Danielle voted for the later time on Wednesday. Okay. And Melissa voted for the earlier time on Wednesday. So it looks as though two people at least want to go back to Wednesday. Okay, how many people want to meet the first Wednesday slot, 4:45 to 6? Wow. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7.
Fun. Whatever.
Well,
the moment you say earlier, I'm voting for it. So
yeah.
It doesn't matter which one.
Okay, so 4:45 to 6 on Wednesday. Who can't do that? Because of trauma team. Competing with Tom. But if everybody else can make that, you're okay with that, Jane?
Yeah.
Okay. So you can make Wednesday 4:45, Asan?
My class
finished. Oh, that's fine. You want to come a little late? That's absolutely fine. So you'll be here by 5. That's great. So you're okay with that? Okay, so that was a lot easier than I thought it was going to be. So basically the same time that we met last semester. All right, wow. I thought that there would be a lot of splitting of the baby in two, but...
That's the last book about more than once. I had to...
There's going to be multiple votes of restructuring. Because I voted for either day in the early slot to not sit around for an hour.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. Okay, well that's great.
It's actually better. Yeah, Wednesday's better.
Mm-hmm. Wednesday's better?
Yeah.
All right, so we'll meet.
Especially if it's like, hey, I can get out of here. Don't have to come back for days.
Oh, you're not here on Thursdays at all?
No, I am
here on Thursdays. I'm saying, but I can leave at 4:45.
Oh, I see. Instead of 6. Okay. So that was, wow, really easy.
See if you get into this program. After time, you'll be scheduling your whole life to not be here as much as possible. Yeah, after second year, you'll be like, how can I not be here?
Why is it 9 o'clock at night and I'm
Why don't I have a God for debt?
So I guess, so this affects Jane and it affects Melissa. Oh, no, it affects Danielle, because I think Danielle also does trauma team supervision, right? So, all right. But, you know, I'm a big believer in democracy. So. The trouble is minority rights sometimes get trampled in a democracy. So I'm sorry, Jane. You're my apologies. Okay. You have another task anyway, which is the... as you mentioned, Jane is the co-editor of the Participant Observer, which is our student newsletter. It comes out twice a year, and you'll see copies in the mailroom downstairs of the Participant Observer. So the other person who is part of our team is Melissa Schroeder, who is the other co-editor, and she will be making it, I guess, because she's not on the trauma supervision. So got that out of the way. All right, good. Next item of business. Valita and I have been talking about the possibility of going back to Uganda in August. And we haven't made a final decision yet. We're getting close. We're leaning toward going, but we haven't made a decision yet. It's just, you know, it's a lot of work, it's a lot of time, it's money, it's everything, but we're considering it. So if we did go, the dates would be July 27th to August 9th, which is exactly 2 weeks. And I don't want to put anybody on the spot, so you can email me. But if you have an interest in going to Uganda. We're only taking one person this year. If we go, we haven't even decided about whether we're going. But if we're going, we're taking one person. And so, email me and let me know whether you're interested in going with us. What it means is that you would be responsible for the cost of the airfare and the vaccinations. Those are the two big costs. The airfare runs about $2,200-$2,300 round trip. Vaccinations right around $700. That includes typhoid, yellow fever, all of the exotic diseases that you could possibly get over there. And Malarone tablets are very costly too. So after you've covered those costs, Valita and I will cover everything over there, room and board. If you want to buy souvenirs, obviously that's on you, but room and board certainly. And Eric is a repeat offender. He's gone with me twice. And maybe you can say just a few words about the experience or the cost. And
the cost is...
The cost.
It's a $3,000 roughly investment. It is worth every penny of it if you can afford it. I went twice. The second time I did my dissertation. The experience of a lifetime in many ways. Bizarre at times. Emotional at times. Eye-opening at times. Really an experience I wouldn't have traded for anything. I'm fortunate enough to be able to afford it and have gotten some help affording it as well. So it was possible to do it for me and to do it again. If you can do it, do it. That's what I would say. There are, you know, quirky things about Uganda that will be very different than your life here.
I don't know, like no electricity.
Yeah.
No running water.
But you come back with a different appreciation for the world and things you would never really see or experience. You know. That's, I guess, what I have to say about it.
And you made a lifelong friend over there,
too. I have Julius over there. And we communicate through Facebook and everything. And would love to see him again. Don't know how that would play out, but I'll definitely be back in Africa at some point in my life. So maybe that way.
Yeah. So I think you would attest to the fact you work hard and you play hard over there.
Yeah.
There's not a whole lot of downtime.
Not a lot of downtime. It gets dark very early because it's right on the equator. So you're up working, but the nights are fun as well. You know, whether it be last year we stayed in Masaka in the city outside of the village and getting to go out there and experience the culture and just the way things are there. And
getting to experience the beer.
And, yeah, and watching Danny Sorrow try to keep up with me drink for drink. For those new in the room, Danny Sorrow is about 5'2", maybe
115
pounds soaking wet. And I'm 6'3", 200. So it didn't end well for her.
I appreciate that.
She was a fighter. I give her credit. But we had a really good time in the city last year. And the year before, it was just the four of us, being Jeff, Valita, and Valita's friend, Chantel. And that was very different, and just spending the time in the village in the evenings with them. Cooking mac and cheese every night. Every night.
Well, you know.
I made it, yeah.
Did it a little bit.
Did make it chilly.
Eric was in charge of one evening meal, and he did a nice job, actually.
I made most of the mac and cheese.
You did, well, you and Chantel. Yeah.
Yeah.
When you went off script, it was actually pretty good.
Yeah.
We had kind of a semi-chili concoction.
Yeah.
that was actually quite tasty.
Yeah, you live there, you're not going to, you know, it's not the Ritz, and there's no great restaurant to go eat at, so, but, you know, you're not there for a luxurious vacation.
And the local food is, you know, by Western tastes, very unpalatable. Awful. So, you know, you'll want to eat mac and cheese. But we work hard. There's a lot of assessment that goes on. And the person who would be going, if someone's interested, would be working with kids, doing the assessments of the kids. Be doing basically your job 2 years ago. Yeah. And, you know, I would train you in the assessment of the kids. And, you know, it's a lot of work, but it'll be a meaningful experience. We guarantee you that.
One other thing to say is that for my first year of externship interviews, it was the first question everyone asked me on an interview. So you went to Africa.
Because you had it on your CV.
Yeah. So it did at least open up some conversations that way, and certainly a means of standing out.
Plus the poster that many of you have your names on. Or the two posters. There were two posters that were presented last year. The first author of the second poster is not here, Melissa, but it was a nice contribution to the study. And as Eric alluded to, he collected his dissertation data last summer and is working on his dissertation proposal, which was in fairly good shape, actually, the first read.
And I'm hoping to have for you next week in another pass. I've added a fair amount, so I'm sure it will be much more read in the ledger. But.
All right. And you also presented. Well, I know Brianna did. Did you?
Yeah.
Yeah, you also did, yeah.
Before my little PowerPoint.
Yeah.
Got some notes and everything.
Right.
And some good ideas, actually, for post-hoc tests.
Right.
Things like that.
Right.
Which will be very valuable.
So, and Eric's research assistant, if you will, was Danielle Sorrow.
Yeah.
And so they both went along with Melissa last summer. But we're only going to take one this year. And so I do want to know if there's interest among you guys. So, but you don't have to say anything publicly. Just email me and let me know. And then we'll take it from there. But Lita and I are going to be making a decision, I would say, within the next 2 or 3 weeks. Because, you know, we don't want this to drag on and nobody knows what we're doing. And if when we do decide, you know, if we decide to go, you know, it's a lot of work. Valita and I put in a tremendous amount of work to organize this and make it happen. And so we need several months lead time to make it a successful trip. And if we go at the end of July, I mean, that's not too far away. So, Aaron.
It's funny, I heard on one of my transcriptions, you were talking to someone as they walked by about like sugar and soap. Do you guys bring that over? Or do you
no, we go into a town about 10 miles out of the village, and this town actually has off and on electricity, and they do have some shops, and you can buy sugar in these very, very terribly thin plastic bags that will break. You could buy these really long bars of soap, laundry soap, and those were our presents, our gifts for our compensation for the caregivers' participation in the study. And then Eric, you had your own form of compensation.
And we gave
soft drinks and
cookies.
Yeah, because they had an additional interview to do with Eric and Danielle, so they gave them their own compensation. But that's what I was referring to. So we couldn't possibly bring that stuff over. We try to pack as light as possible. We do bring the mac and cheeses over because you can't buy that over there. But even so, you can go into a store in this town that's outside the village, or the village is outside the town, but you go into town and you can buy like macaroni shells. You can buy this odd tasting, kind of like spaghetti sauce or tomato sauce, like an all-purpose type of sauce, and you can buy some kidney beans. You know, there are foodstuffs you can buy
in the like a retail grocery store. Almost like a, I guess the closest thing would be like a bodega. All of you are familiar with that. It's sort of like what it is over there. Which you, that's the closest thing.
Yeah. It's not graffiti.
No. It's no fairway, but it'll do. So that's the answer to that question. Any other questions about the trip or
the show? You said you have been going when you're working with the children?
Yep.
The same story expenses.
Exactly. Everything's going to be the same. I would add one instrument to the children's protocol. But other than that, it's going to be identical to what Eric's been doing the last 2 years. And the caregiver interviews are also going to be the same. It's just that these kids are going to be a year older. So it's going to be the same sample too. Yeah. So, I would hope for, we had, 77 kids?
We did.
Which is too short of the, we collected 79 kids in 2011. And then last year we were able to locate 77 of the 79 original kids, which was fabulous. I was just like beside myself, as Eric knows, to get that kind of a yield after 1 year. But it's kind of a captive audience. Where are they going to go? They're born there, they live there, they die there. There's not a whole lot of mobility, but a lot of them do go to the capital of Kampala, which is 2 hours away, 3 hours away, and sometimes they go and they live there. So that was the case in two of these kids' lives. But otherwise, we were able to collect data on 77. So ideally, we could collect data on 77 of the 79. Maybe if the other two come back, we could do the other two. But I'm guessing we're going to end up with maybe 75, 74, or something like that. But that's going to be a great haul if we can do that. But to do it in 2 weeks, we have to be focused. We have to work every day. We do take Sunday afternoon off, and we make our pilgrimage to Julius's house, and where their family of nine, is it, slaughters a duck. Not in front of us, but behind the shed, and prepares a meal for all of us. So it's very meaningful, and there are goats running around. You'll get to carry a goat around, a baby goat. What else?
Yeah, don't tell customs.
Yeah, right. When you're coming back, you have to fill out a form that asks whether you've spent any time on a farm and handling livestock, and you just check note of that. Okay. Yeah, that's right.
It's on the podcast now.
Right. Busted. So if I don't come to school one day, you'll know I've been arrested by U.S. Customs. Anyway, that's just a brief teaser for the trip. So if anybody's interested, email me and let me know that you're interested. You have to have the means to pay for the airline trip. And the vaccinations were so costly. So, but we'll cover everything over there, except for souvenirs, of course. All right? Okay. So, I was thinking over the break, what do we do this semester? I mean, we're almost done with the transcriptions, and I have an idea, but I wanted to get an update maybe from Tina, just say where we're at with the transcribing of last year's data. You look like a deer head caught in the headlights, Sarah. I didn't mean to put you on the spot.
Well, the child videos should be done this week, and then the child videos after this week, there's about 4 videos left, and then should be done.
Okay, great. So 2 weeks from today, we'll be all done with transcriptions. What were you? Maybe want to describe what students are doing to our two new members?
Some students decide to do maternal videos, which are the interviews that were done in Uganda. So they transcribe the whole video, and then some students decide to do children videos, and they only transcribe the story sound. And so that's the transcribing.
thank you. Very good. The story stems is the or the attachment story completion task, which is a series of five story stems that are provided to the child. The child uses a family of dolls then to complete the stem of the story. So they respond to the story stem in a variety of ways. And there are five of them, as I said. And what is yielded from that is an attachment classification. So did you do any attachment?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, so you're familiar with the general Mary Ainsworth, the three attachment patterns, and then Mary Main came along, discovered the fourth, disorganized. Okay. So these five story stems yield an attachment classification for each child. So we have attachment patterns based on these attachment story completion task narratives. So that's what we've got. And so some of the students have been transcribing these story stems from last semester. And we're almost done with all the transcribing. Now, I want people to know that if you are interested in learning how to code these story stems for attachment, and we've had several people here who've actually gone for the training. I know Danielle actually completed the training and she completed the certification, so she's actually coding for me now, and I'm paying her. She's getting paid for this. So she's actually doing that even as we speak. Brianna, you attended the training, right? And what can you say a few words about it?
I really don't. I couldn't
explain. Were you impaired when you?
I think we learned kind of how to administer the story stems, kind of how to manipulate the dolls. It was a different kind of story stem than what you had.
Yeah, a little bit different. But you learned how to code them, right? So you had there was a coding system of rates from several rating scales, and you'd look at a story stem. Right? And then you would apply the rating scales. You would rate the story stem according to the anchor points on each of these rating scales.
Yeah. Like closeness with caregiver figures or emotional dysregulation or resolution of the conflict presented in the story stem.
Right. So this is just a long way of saying that Allison Splond, who's in charge of the training, and she's actually developed this coding system that we're using and we're applying to our data set, is going to be conducting another training. I have a flyer posted on the Applied Child Concentration Bulletin Board downstairs. I also have a flyer posted on my door. And the dates are Saturday, April 13th, and Sunday, April 14th. And I actually am going to be attending myself, because I have not done that yet. And I'd like to see how she trains and learn more about the intricacies of the instrument. So if you have an interest in that, she's doing it. She has a student fee and all of that, so you'll get the student discount. And it'd be nice to have a showing there. So if you're interested in getting that training done, and then if you get trained and you go through the certification process, I will hire you to code the data that we're going to be collecting if we go this coming summer. So that would be a source of income for you. It would at least pay for the training. So that's April 13th and April 14th, Saturday and Sunday. So if you're interested, let me know within the next month or so that you're interested, and I'll let Allison know that you're interested. I don't want it to fill up and then you don't get the opportunity to go, because these trainings tend to be pretty popular.
Just a question. What's the certification process?
The certification process is that you have to then code a certain number of videos that Allison has and has already coded. So what you do is you code the videos that she has, you submit your ratings to her, and then she calculates your reliability with her. She's the gold standard because she developed the coding instrument. So if you have completed these videos that she'll send you, or transcripts, and you submit the ratings, and she calculates that you're correlation with her is 0.8 or higher, then you're considered certified. If you dip below 0.8, she'll send you another batch of transcripts to code, and then you send your ratings to those transcripts to her, and then she'll recalculate your reliability until you reach above 0.8, and then you're quote certified as a coder. And not only would I hire you, but this coding system is becoming increasingly popular, not only in the city but also around the country and around the world. People are beginning to use this coding system, and so, you know, when Allison or I get a request by somebody, another researcher, another research group somewhere else, you know, we need coders for the attachment story completion task, I could say, well, Jane Piesman has this Jane Piesman has this expertise, she's certified, this is her email address, why don't you contact her? And so it's a way of generating some income for yourself. Ideally, that's how it would work. So, do you know how many transcripts?
15. Okay. Right. So it would be 75 stems that you'd have to code. And how long, do you know how long it takes? I know you didn't actually complete the certification, but...
It really depends on how kind of well you feel like you master each of like the six or seven categories that you need to read on, because there's definitely some nuances to each. And it would really be hard, because some of them were kind of cut and dry, some of them were really difficult. And I noticed in myself, I was kind of grappling with it to move on, and that's why I ended up kind of not even moving forward with it. So maybe like a half hour for each.
So each one would take 6 minutes, right? So 6 times 75 is what, 450 minutes, I think. So what is that? That's 7.5 hours of work.
It can be much less. But it's like I said, some of them are like, oh, that's very clear, you know.
Child dog did not see proximity to the caregiver, the caregiver got one, was not even present in the story, zero, or whatever the appropriate coding would be. So it really depends on your level of comfortability with certain categories, which some are, like I said, much more nuanced and complex than others.
Yeah, it could vary
among story stems, participants, and so forth. So if you have an interest in that, as I said, contact me within the next month or so, so that I can get you on the list with Allison. She is currently coding some of the data, and Danielle's coding other parts of the data set. So that's ongoing, and you know, I'm paying Danielle out of a grant that I have specifically for this project. So, and as I said, I'm going now. You can, if you're interested in attending, and but you're not interested in getting doing the certification, that's okay, because I'm actually going, but I'm not going to do the certification process myself. I'm just interested in learning about the coding system more. So you're welcome to come, even if you don't have an interest in, you know, becoming certified and doing any coding for me or for anyone else.
It was interesting because some of the
And she's actually a clinical psychologist. She's not even a developmental psychologist. So she has that clinical insight and intuition that a developmental psychologist wouldn't have. The instrument itself was developed originally by a developmental psychologist, Inga Bretherton at the University of Wisconsin. And she first published it in 1990. And, you know, it's being used by a number of child
developmental and clinical researchers all over the world. There's a huge group of researchers in London who are using it, and a number of research labs in the United States, obviously, who are using it. But I think it's just such a neat instrument because it's semi-projective, and you can get some very creative responses from kids using it. And it has a lot of clinical utility, which I guess you guys talked about the last training. So I'm going, and if anyone else wants to go, you know, let me know within about a month or so, just so I can put you on the list, so it doesn't fill up too soon. Okay, so the last thing I wanted to talk about before we end, any questions, by the way? No? Okay. Is, you know, I was thinking about what we could do with the time this semester, and if I can bring you back to near the end of last semester, you know, we were finishing up transcriptions, and the deadline for the APA posters was coming up, and we tried to figure out whether anybody would be interested in going to Hawaii, and, you know, interestingly enough, no one wanted to go to Hawaii. Can you believe that? It might have had to do something with cost. I don't know. You have to ask them. But as a result, we aren't doing any posters this year. Last year, the APA convention was in Orlando. Did you go?
No, my best friend.
Okay. So a number, well, not a number of people, but two people went, right? It was Deb and Jennifer. You two went to present your posters. And so I guess you had a pretty good time down there. Did you go to Disney World? So it was a good experience, but it was in the country. I mean, in the contiguous 48. This one is in Hawaii, and I think it was just cost prohibitive for people. So therefore, there was no burning urgency to develop a poster to present because no one will be there to do it. Now, apparently, the trauma team is sending a few people to Hawaii to present, so that's good for them. It left us with, you know, nothing to do this semester. And so, because last semester, or the spring of last year, what we did was we coded data for these two posters, and we spent the entire spring semester working on that project, which was interesting. We did some research on coding systems for symbolic play, and you were very involved in that, in the selection. We ended up going with the instrument that you found.
No, we modified it.
Brianna modified it, but it was based on an instrument from a Tamas Lamanda from NYU.
Yeah.
Right? Who never did get back to you until the very end.
No, until we were in Africa the following year.
Right.
I never responded to her.
Did you hear an explanation for why?
Yeah. She was just going through her email.
I don't remember. But she couldn't find it, and so whatever.
Cool. Jane.
I don't know what this could have come to. Remember, I emailed Brother Jen. And she did get back to me. She has another coding system, right? She's one of the...
A symbolic play coding system?
Yeah, but I asked her a question and she gave me an answer that was a total non sequitur. And then I would try to phrase it another way and be very polite and I'd give another...
Well, yeah, let me try to explain that. I think, you know, Inga by this time is in her late 80s.
Okay.
And I don't know that she's all there now, if you know what I mean. So that's probably what you...
It's too bad. Okay.
She was brilliant. She was brilliant in her heyday. She was a near genius. I mean, just a brilliant woman, one of the founding mothers of attachment theory. No question about it. She's, you know, if Mary Ainsworth is here, she's just right underneath Mary Ainsworth. She's like on a level with Mary Main. I mean, she's one of the pioneers of attachment research. There's no question about it. A theoretician in her own right. But she's in her late 80s now, and all of her peers, you know, have pretty much died off. John Bowlby, Mary Ainsworth, and, you know, she's in her probably in her upper 80s, and so I don't think everything's there, everything's working properly. So I think that's what probably happened.
Well, I gave up after.
Yeah. Sure.
I wasn't
right. Right. So, I mean, it's unfortunate, but we did go with this other coding system, which I think worked out fairly well for us. But we spent the entire second semester coding these videos for Symbolic Play, the attachment story completion task videos, and meeting to talk about ratings to prevent iterator drift. So I think that went very well, and we had some one of the posters anyway had some interesting results. Was it yours or? It's a sore spot for Deb. So Melissa won the lottery on that one, I guess. But no, it was an interesting experience. I think everybody learned a lot from it. So this year, I'm thinking, okay, what do? There's no poster to work for. So I thought of doing a qualitative research study. what was that reaction?
I never thought I'd say that.
Jeff Goodman, qualitative? Was that an oxymoron? I'm known as the quantitative geek, I guess, along with Camilo in the department. But yeah, I thought, why not? I've done one qualitative study before with Valita on some caregiver data. The caregivers tell stories, typical stories that they tell their children growing up. They usually have a moral to them, and we analyze these stories for different themes. And so I thought it would be interesting, and we talked a little bit about this last semester, but I want to analyze the story stems of the attachment story completion task for gender role. Okay, what we've noticed, those of us who work with the kids, is that gender roles are very clearly defined at a very early age in these kids. So 2 years ago, we conducted attachment story completion tests on these kids when they were ages 3 to 5, and already, wouldn't you agree, the gender roles of these kids were very highly stratified even at that early age. Girls did one thing, boys did another. They also viewed men and women very differently. The following year, last year, went back and same kids, 4 to 6, same idea. What I thought would be interesting is that is going back to 2009. In 2009, I took my first trip to Uganda. It was Valita's third trip, and I didn't take any students, and we actually collected data on a group, a sample of 51 5- to 7-year-olds. And the 5- to 7-year-olds had more developed stories, as you might imagine, than the 3- to 5-year-olds or the 4- to 6-year-olds. So I thought maybe we could look at the 5- to 7-year-old stories from 2009 and analyze them do a content analysis on them for gender roles. How does that grab you guys? Jane?
Could it also have a statistical aspect to it? It might just be descriptive, but you could talk about the gender roles that came up most frequently.
Absolutely. There's nothing that would prevent us from...
Were they more pronounced in boys and girls?
Absolutely. We could do quantitative. Absolutely, we do. It's called mixed methods analysis, and we could definitely throw some of that in. I was just thinking about that today, how we could do just some descriptive statistics on what we find in the content analysis. But you know, if that grabs people, if that's interesting to people, gender roles, it's the thing that I know that when I first went to Uganda in 2009 and I was doing this research, it's the thing that just jumped out at me, because I personally did every single attachment story completion task in 2009. I did 51. We were there for 2.5 weeks, though, so I don't want to make it sound like, you know, I was working 15-hour days, but...
I mean, I don't know whether you'd be interested in this or how much time the team has, but one thing that struck me, because last mm-hmm. year I did all caregiver interviews, mm-hmm. and this year I've been doing primarily child.
Mm-hmm.
So what struck me is some of the children, for example, when Naka spills his juice, the result is he gets beaten. And it's just right to beating. In the other cases, it's they give them more juice. So it might be.
Now, who does the beating? Mother or father?
Right.
Or a sibling?
For the gender piece, but also in how many of these stories do they end up with, you know, somebody dead result? And in another case, you know, it's sort of handled differently.
Mm-hmm. So maybe we could ask a secondary question. How would you frame the research question?
I mean, I'd have to look. I mean, it might. I guess what I would do first is go through and see what the results are in each of the stories. Sounds like I had some kids who, when kid fell off the rock and hurt his knee, you know, some of them had to keep dying, mm-hmm. and others and a burial and. Others had, you know, the kid having a band-aid put on, he was fine. So I just think that's interesting.
Yeah. Now, I just want to comment on that, that some of what you just said has a lot to do with attachment, the quality of attachment. So parents or child dying, that would be disorganized attachment right off the bat. So we don't want to do something that overlaps with what Allison and or somebody in this room is going to be coding, right? Which is attachment. These what I'm saying is that these interviews are already being coded for attachment constructs.
Oh, okay.
So I don't want to overlap with what's already being coded. But if you could frame the research question in such a way that it doesn't overlap with attachment constructs, I'm happy to entertain the idea.
It would have to depend on, you know, I'd have to look at all that and just, you know, go story by story and see what the end results were, divide the gender, and then, you know,
well, what I
see whether there are any patterns that are working.
What I could do is, you know, these next couple of weeks, you know, we're going to be finishing up the transcribing, but we're also going to be just kind of like thinking about what we want to do. My idea was gender roles, but I'm open to modifying that or changing that idea. Why don't I send everybody before next week 5 attachment story completion task transcripts from this sample we would be coding. Now, the rules for coding in grounded theory qualitative research are slightly more relaxed than quantitative coding. If this were a quantitative study, I wouldn't be sending you these transcripts to review if you're going to be coders. It would be a conflict of interest. But because it's qualitative, we can be a little bit more relaxed with the rules. I'll send everybody 5, and I'll need your 2 email addresses so you're included in this group email. I'll send everybody 5 transcripts. I'll just randomly pull out 5 transcripts from the 2009 sample of 5 to 7-year-old kids' attachment story completion tasks. And you can look through the 5 transcripts that I pull. And if an idea jumps out at you, write it down and we'll talk about it next week. How does that sound? Does that sound reasonable, Jane?
Can we just have each person write down what happened in each story? Person died, but just so we can see if there are any patterns. Because if I get 5, I might get completely 5 different results, but the whole group together might.
Well, you're basing it on the assumption that people want to study what happens at the end of the stories. And I don't know that everybody wants to study that. I mean, that is a question that could be asked. How do kids resolve their stories? It also borders on the attachment construct. Now, Brianna has taken the coding training, so you can tell me what they look for, right?
And that's one of the main categories is how well the child gets to resolve the conflict presented.
Right. So we actually have that information already.
But I have a question. Mm-hmm. I don't know this area so well. But I would think in America I could understand coding every death as a disorganized attachment. But what about in a country where there's been tons of war and killing? Could it be experienced? You know, I had an experience. My uncle was stabbed before he went to the hospital. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
I don't.
Well, I would also imagine if you experienced a death like that of a very close caregiver, it would disrupt your attachment system in some very profound ways. It's not only a death, it's also how you tell the story of the death and how disorganized and dysregulated you become in your affect when you're telling the story about somebody dying in a story. You know what I'm saying? It's not just if somebody dies. I mean, I was a little bit flippant when I said that. It's actually how the story is told, and if the person experiences affective dysregulation as they're talking about the death in their story.
A lot of the kids that I transcribed, it was because they gave such minimal responses. And I think in two instances where I saw death, it was like, that just happened. But it also struck me that in the story about the monster in the room, you know, some kids say mommy came up right away and got rid of them, killed the monster, and others, you know, other things happen that are more untoward toward the people. I don't know whether that ties into attachment.
Well, why do I do this? I'll send out five randomly selected transcripts from the 2009 sample, and people can just read them with an open mind, and anything strikes you as interesting or you want to pursue this with the entire sample, you know, write down those ideas and bring them next week, and maybe we'll put it to a vote or whatever. I mean, I vote for gender roles because that's just something interesting to me personally, but also it's something that just jumped out at me as I was actually doing these assessments of these kids back in 2009, and you know, the themes of gender role jumped out at me again in 2011 and again in 2012. Yeah.
I was just suggesting something in addition. I wasn't suggesting that.
Okay. Generally, and I want to get to this book,
generally you pick one research question and you really build a study around the one research question, but I think we could do two. It would just take a little longer to code, but I'd
like, if we're going to ask two research questions of the data, I'd like the two questions to be somehow related to each other. But you know, I'm open to it. We'll continue talking about it next week. But this is the book that we're going to be using to guide us in our coding of these data. It's called Qualitative Data. It's by people's favorite authors, Auerbach and Silverstein. It's Eric's favorite book. He actually asked for this for Hanukkah and he got it. Uh, 2003, New York University Press. It's actually very light volume. It's there are lots of appendices, but the book itself without the appendices is only 130 pages. Very reasonable and easy to read. Anybody of the post students read this book before?
Read it?
Yeah. Read it? What are you talking about? Read the book? Was it assigned? Were parts of it assigned to you in Hillary's class?
I think parts of it, but it was mostly delivered through her lecture as well as the guest lecture about one of the alumni from our program who used qualitative methodology for her dissertation.
Who? Which one was it?
Sylvia.
Thea Menji.
Yeah.
Okay. Were you on her coding team?
No. Separate. But she came in and talked about her process.
Yeah.
Kind of looking at analyzing the data and kind of constructing themes around it and kind of what the coding team went through to do that. And there was a few, I think, people in the classroom that had been part of the coding team. We kind of received it through that.
Yeah. Okay. So, what I might do is I might actually, I know you guys are financially strapped, I might have Tina actually scan the book. Maybe I could send it out as a PDF. What do you think? Yeah, why not?
Sure.
That's the spirit.
I'll copyright.
Unless people want to spend, I actually don't know how much this book costs on Amazon. $10? $20? I don't know. You didn't buy it? You bought it. Oh, you got it for Hanukkah, right?
But I have the hardcover.
There's a hardcover? Now I know that isn't true.
Oh, before you thought
that
maybe
it was hardbound, maybe you did. I don't know.
I believe it's a block.
Eric is not a big fan of qualitative research. I don't know if you haven't picked that up, but I thought this would be an interesting study. It's not about anybody in the program, right?
Sure.
It's about kids halfway around the world.
Sure.
So it avoids some of the criticisms you've had.
Most of them.
Okay, most of them.
So far as it's not a block.
Okay. You want to explain that to our guests?
No.
All right. So, if you're interested in the methodology of this procedure that we're going to be using, this is the book to buy, and we'll start getting into that. You know, I picked out one transcript. We're actually going to stop very soon, but. Now, back in the day, when this was transcribed back in 2009, actually Jennifer Anderson, who most of you know from last year, actually was involved in the transcribing of a lot of these. I had students transcribe into two columns. The laser pointer. The first column is the verbal communications of the administrator, which was me, the translator, which is represented by T, and then the kid. Now the kid obviously speaks only Luganda, so the translator is speaking on behalf of the child. And then the second column are the behavioral observations. This is what the child is actually doing with the dolls and the props, and these should match up with each other in temporal sequence. So if you read this, this is what's going on behaviorally at the time that this is being spoken. So what you would be doing, and I actually did it before I came here tonight with this particular transcript, I underlined parts of the transcript that I thought might be related to gender roles. For example, they mop up. Who mops up? This is juice that's been spilled. Mom. Okay, so the child is assuming that the mother is going to be cleaning up the juice, not the father, not the sibling, not the child herself. So this was a female participant, and so her doll was a female doll. The protagonist in her stories was a female doll, and the mother cleans up the juice. So just underlining raw text that might have something to do with the research question that we're posing to the data. Now, again, we don't have to do gender roles. That's just something that interested me. So what I'll do is I will send out this particular transcript and four others to everybody on the list and just review them. I don't want you to spend a lot of time on these because I know you guys are transcribing. So, and I know that people, I want to thank the people who transcribed over the break, and I do want to give you guys time off, time served, so to speak, for the work you did over the break, because that's not included in your research assistantships, those of you who are doing research assistantships. So those of you who did work over the break, who are working for money through your research assistantship, you know, you will be getting a break. I just want to finish the transcriptions, and then we'll be taking a break from all actual work outside of this meeting. What we'll be doing is we'll be learning how to do this coding. And I'm doing it kind of for the first time. I did do this with Valita once for a paper that we're trying to get published right now. But this will be my second time, first time really doing it with a group of people. I've led many, many coding teams in my life, never led a qualitative coding team.
so it's going to be new for me as well, so we can learn it together. You know, I want to master this book, and so those are the thoughts I've had. So if you could come in, just having reviewed these five transcripts and with some ideas on paper about what you might think would be interesting to look at or how we might frame a research question, that would be very helpful. All right. Ready to go?
Okay.
All right, so I'll see you guys next week. And we're meeting at 4:45 on Wednesday. Thanks.
Do you want us to just, like, write down our emails?
Yeah. Yeah, just write them down. And I think I have yours already. Let me just make sure. Asan.AbdulKareem@my.liu.edu. Okay, that's the best. Okay. Yeah, Tina is going to work with you. Well, not, actually, I'm not going to have you do the coding.
Oh,
if you want to learn how to do the coding, you can come to the meetings. But what you're going to be doing is the data entry. So Tina's going to schedule a time.
Yeah.
All right.
All right,
I'm
learning.
Okay.
Yeah. So, are you saying the experience of the
what's that?
I'm just curious. I'm asking how the children experience so long the
oh, yeah. Yeah. Especially if there's no, you know, secondary caregiver to kind of take over and help the child resolve their feelings about the death.
Or there is a caregiver
who doesn't do that. Yeah, it's disorganized. Yeah. No, but if the one that's there is not there anymore, how does the child pick up the pieces? It's kind of like the flip side of Eric's dissertation. What's the experience of the child? Oh, it's... Right. You know, if it's something you want to pursue, I don't know how many of these kids actually experience the death of a caregiver. Do you have a sense of that? Not from the 2009 sample, but from...
I have no real way of knowing.
Because a number of the kids are being cared for primarily by grandmothers, a few by aunts. And the question is, well, why isn't the mother the primary caregiver? Did she die? And I don't know the, I mean, actually, Valita would be the one, I guess, who could answer that
yeah,
best.
Yeah, and we didn't really, it could be really good. I mean, do we know the relationship that it's just carrier? I don't think we...
No, Valita would know.
Yeah.
But you might have heard in some of the interviews whether...
I know adults that lost their parents and how that... Okay.
Right, but the caregivers you interviewed, did they say, you know, the participant's mom died, and so now I'm on the scene?
No. No, we didn't assess that at all.
That's just so interesting.
I know that there's a father. We had one or two fathers in the sample, and I know the mother did die in those two cases. I just don't, you know, I don't know how big of a sample. It would be a subsample, obviously, right? And I don't know how... Yeah. Sure. But, you know, to create a research study out of it, you need a viable sample size. I don't know that the subsample of the 51 kids is going to be viable. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.